One of the things that a lot of people talk about, of course, is sugar, right? And refined carbohydrate. And something that a lot of people aren't that aware of is seed oils. So I think it's quite important for us to educate ourselves and the world around seed oils. So Nina is going to tell us about what's happened in the past and what this means for our health. Nina, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Again, I feel like I should have done a costume change, like Beyoncé or something, but at my age, I'm just so glad I know who that is. So seed oils is something that I've studied for a good 20 years now. And you know, if you live on Twitter or Instagram or wherever, it is all over. Seed oils is everywhere. And you feel like there must be a large body of scientific literature backing up all of these new influencers talking about seed oils. So there's a lot of confusion, and I want to try to clear up, you know, what even are seed oils and what is the actual evidence that they are might be damaging for health. So again, my disclosures, I don't receive any industry funds of any kind. So what are seed oils? This is most of them, corn oil, cottonseed, soybean, safflower, rapeseed oil, peanut oil, canola oil. They're all relatively new. The history of our cooking fats was not seed oils. These are the fats that we cooked with. We cooked with tallow that came from cattle, suet, which is from ruminant animals, it comes around the organs, lard, which comes from pigs, and butter. These were the main cooking fats in the Western world, really the only cooking fats in the Western world. Lard used to be popular. It was not an insult to call somebody a lardy, if you can imagine that. And I know that you're kind of thinking, well, what about olive oil? Didn't people cook with that? But when I was researching olive oil for my book, I found out that it is not an ancient food stuff. It was used for medicinal purposes. It was used to anoint the body to make your muscles glisten in battle. But it was not really used for food and cooking until the 19th century. In Spain, this is a reference to in Greece, what this archaeologist found. But it's also true in Spain and in Italy that there really is not evidence for use as in the culinary sphere until the 1900s. So olive oil was used, not so much. So what oils used to be used for was as a lubricant for machinery in the Industrial Revolution. I mean, one of the main reasons that we hunted whales was to get whale oil. The oil from whales was the main product that we got from them, and that was used to lubricate the vast and growing amount of machinery that was fueling the Industrial Revolution. When we hunted out all the whales, or most of them, the Americans in the South who were growing cotton, they discovered that cotton seeds, which was a byproduct of their crop, could be crushed into oil, cottonseed oil. And that was the very beginning of oils, as I'll explain, that were used to become foodstuffs in the U.S. So I just want to pause for a moment and explain to you the chemistry of fatty acids and to understand a saturated solid fat like butter, which is the top molecule here. You can see that it's a straight molecule. So those molecules stack on top of each other very neatly, and that's why that is a solid, right? These other molecules, unsaturated fatty acids, they're unsaturated because there are many double bonds in them. You can see those double equal signs along the chain there. They're squiggly molecules. They don't stack neatly on top of each other. Therefore, they have a lot of space between them, and that's an oil. So we're talking about unsaturated fatty acids. These are in oils, it turns out that they're very unstable. They go rancid easily, they degrade over time, and so there was the great invention of being able to use oils was to learn how to hydrogenate them. This was a process that was invented by a German in the early 1900s. And you could see it takes that squiggly molecule and through a chemical process that I'll show you in a second, it makes it straight and flat. So you can take an oil and make it a straight molecule that allows it to be hardened. It allows it to be a hard substance, so that all those molecules stack up against each other. This process of hydrogenation turns out to be a rather dramatic one. It involves pressure, heat, hexane, a solvent. It uses a metal catalyst. It has to be steamed to eliminate bad odors. It then has to be bleached to remove the gray color that comes out. When it's gray, it then needs to be winterized for stability and enhanced with artificial colors and synthetic vitamins. It's a pretty extensive process. I've actually been inside of a hydrogenation plant, and it's just a huge, massive operation. But through hydrogenation, that cottonseed oil that through Procter & Gamble was the inventor of this product, this is the first time that hardened oil came into the food supply as a foodstuff in the form of Crisco. So they had, they were able to harden this oil. They looked at it. They said, hey, that looks kind of like lard. Now that we've winterized and deodorized and stabilized it and bleached it, and so let's try to sell it as a foodstuff to people. That came in 1911, was the very first Crisco that came into the food supply. That's the first time, really, that hydrogenated products came into the food supply. And they had a huge marketing campaign telling women to leave lard, which was dirty and came from the abattoir, the slaughterhouse, and instead choose this new fangled fat that came out of clean, sterilized labs and was much more appealing to leave your traditional ways behind. So margarine was another hydrogenated product, very similar to Crisco. It was meant to replace butter, and it eventually did in large part. And then eventually, we got just plain old cooking oils when they figured out how to do a very light touch form of hydrogenation that allowed for vegetable oils to sit on the shelf and not become rancid. So all of these oils got a huge boost in 1961 when the American Heart Association, really the first organization anywhere in the world, told people to start eating these polyunsaturated oils instead of saturated fats in order, as the best measure of prevention against heart disease. It really all started with this recommendation in 1961. It turns out, from my research, I found that the American Heart Association had an alliance with Procter & Gamble, again, the maker of Crisco. Procter & Gamble had, back in 1948, virtually launched the American Heart Association by making it the recipient of this radio show called Truth or Consequences, and made it over what it'd be today, $17 million overnight. And according to the American Heart Association's own corporate history, it just launched the entire group, and it was sort of the bang of big bucks that launched the group. So it had a lot of backing from Procter & Gamble, and last time I checked, it still had backing from Procter & Gamble. And this enabled vegetable oils to become like medicine. They were marketed as medicine. It was like something your doctor should prescribe to you. Maybe you should have your 8-year-old worrying about cholesterol. I think this ad was actually pulled out of circulation for being illegal. And the vegetable oil manufacturers were very involved in spreading this message. This was a book that was distributed free to thousands of doctors across the United States. This is a Dr. Jerry Stamler, who is a colleague, close colleague of Ansel Keys. The whole book, everything in it was sponsored by the Corn Products Company and the Wesson Fund for Medical Research, both vegetable oil manufacturers. If you take just a quick look at, this is polyunsaturated, so this is vegetable oil consumption in the United States from virtually zero. Remember, we didn't even consume vegetable oils before 1911 with Crisco, up to today where there are 9-10% of all calories we consume. This almost perfectly parallels the rise in heart disease. So it seems absurd that we should think that this would fight heart disease when our increased consumption is in correlates with the rise in heart disease. It certainly didn't seem to prevent it. So what are the sources of these fatty acids in our diet today? Most of them come from these vegetable oils. These polyunsaturated fats can also be found in nuts and seeds. They can also be found in chicken quite a bit and some pork products, depending on how the pig is fed. But most of it comes from polyunsaturated vegetable oils. And just if you look at the top chart here, you can see that red line is soybean oil. Most of the oil that we consume, in the U.S. at least, is soybean oil. That's what we're consuming. What are the health effects? Well, so in those clinical trials on saturated fats that I was describing and Arnie made reference to, those what we call the CORE trials, in almost all of those trials, what they did is they took a regular diet, which at the time a regular diet was considered 18% saturated fat, which is very high to us today, but that was considered normal in the 60s and 70s, so that was the control group. The intervention group in these clinical trials was a group that instead of regular milk, they got soy-filled milk. Instead of regular cheese, they got soy-filled cheese. They got their version of the Impossible Burger. So they had much higher content of vegetable oils in their diets. So in effect, those trials can be seen as clinical trials of vegetable oils. You know, what happens when you dramatically increase the content of polyunsaturated fats in somebody's diet? So a little known result from those CORE trials is that in nearly a dozen of them, four of which are listed here, there was higher rates of death from cancer. That's the experimental group. This is from the LA Veterans Study. This was a consistent finding across these trials, higher rates of death from cancer. This was so concerning to the National Institutes of Health that they hosted a series of high-level workshops, at least four that I know of, maybe five, where they brought together top scientists at the time, including Ansel Keys, and they said, what do we do about this cancer effect that we are seeing? We can't, we can't just ignore it. And so there was a lot of conversation. I read all the reports that came out of it, and basically their conclusion is, we can't explain it, but it is so important to lower cholesterol. That's our dominant public health message today, to prevent heart disease, so we're just going to basically ignore these cancer results. We think they're of secondary importance. Here are some other results that came out of those CORE clinical trials. In quite a few, there were higher rates of gallstones. There was, in some cases, higher rates of stroke. And in one trial, there was possible cirrhosis of the liver. Now, I want to make an important clarification here, which is that vegetable oils reliably lower your cholesterol. So what we're seeing here in all of this, the cancer, the gallstones, the strokes, it could be that this is caused by the vegetable oils. It could also be that this is caused by lowering cholesterol. In fact, some of the data I'm showing here show that some of these effects you see when cholesterol is lowered through drugs, which suggests that it's actually the lowering of cholesterol that has these health effects. So starting in the late 1970s with Mary Enig, an undersung hero who was the first person to find out that, or one of the first people who found out that hydrogenated oils, the backbone of Crisco and margarine, that actually they contained trans fats, and trans fats were harmful. They caused heart disease. Also, Fred Kummerow, who spent his entire career fighting trans fats. And then later in the story came Walter Willett. But this led effectively in the US to a ban on trans fats. I think in Europe, there's just a severe limit on them. But effectively, it was no longer possible to use these hydrogenated oils because of this side effect of the trans fats that they produced. Well, what replaced trans fats? You still had this basic problem, which is that oils are unstable. They go rancid, they oxidize, and so they weren't really, you can't make a shelf-stable product out of them. You can't make cookies if the, you know, the Oreo cookie in the middle is greasy and dribbling apart, dribbling on the shelf. That doesn't work. All of those products had hydrogenated oil. So what were food industry manufacturers going to replace them with? Well, they did a number of things. They tried to use genetically modified soybeans in order to create oils that produced a lesser amount of the fatty acids that tended to oxidize. They started producing more sunflower oil, which also is less prone to oxidation. And this is not on this slide, but they started to use a lot of palm oil because that's very high in saturates, and to some extent coconut oil, but that's more expensive. But in many cases, they just reverted back to using regular old oils. And so one of the things that I discovered in doing my research was that this was a huge problem, especially in food service operations. So, you know, they started just using regular oils in fryers, in restaurants. And this was something, you know, previously they had used hydrogenated oils, which were stable. Now they had regular oils. And I learned about this from somebody who worked, a high-level employee of Loders Crocklin, and he told me that when this transformation took place, that trans fats were out, regular oils were back in, he said it was a huge problem for, like, McDonald's and Burger King, that the oils were oxidizing, and their oxidation products included things like polymers, which is like a paint-like substance, and they were having this kind of sticky paint-like substance build up on the walls. They had to get extra strong cleaning solutions to get it off. Just imagine what was happening in the lungs of the workers who are you know, standing over these fryers. They then discovered that these oxidation products that were being created I just want to go back to this slide. When I say oxidation products, what do I mean? It's this polyunsaturated oil. So each one of those double bonds, those little equal sign, each one of those can open up and attach to an oxidant. So that's what oxidation is. Those especially under light or heat, as you know from your chemistry labs, it speeds up the experiment. The double bonds open up, they attach to oxygen, that's oxidation. And then oxidation drives inflammation. So you have these heated oils in restaurants, and they were finding that there were so many highly unstable oxidation products on the workers' uniforms that when they would take them in their little truck to the dryer, to the laundromat, they would burst into flames in the back of the truck. They would just spontaneously burst into flames. And then even after they had been cleaned in the washing machine, they would burst into flames again in the heat of the dryer. This was just a huge problem. And actually, I don't know how they've solved it. But it speaks to the tremendous instability of these products. This is just a few of the toxic oxidation products that are produced by heated oils. One very well known, aldehydes. They're actually a former marker for cancer. You actually measure aldehydes to see a level of cancer in somebody's body. They cause these oxidation products called rapid cell death. They interfere with your DNA and RNA. And they're implicated in neurodegenerative diseases. Another well-known oxidation product created by oils is acrolein. That's also, you see that in cigarette smoking. It causes inflammation. And these are known toxins that are products of heated oils. So, and we also know from the experiments of this Dr. Cellini, who works at University of Michigan, that those products, when you eat them in fried, she actually went around to Burger King's in her neighborhood. When you eat them, hundreds of them are absorbed into your body, and they pass through the blood-brain barrier. So there's no question that these products enter our bodies. And that is why McDonald's used to fry their French fries in tallow. Because, well, this is also before vegetable oils even came along. But it's a much more stable way to make your French fries. All right. Where to find all these summaries on inflammation and oxidation. Really, the main place, I can't believe this, that this still exists, is the original work that I did in my book, which is in chapter 9 of my book, and is excerpted here. It's excerpted by this organization. They have it on their website. You can read it for free. The footnotes aren't there, but if you want to read this whole story, you can read it there. And I just want to, in sum, say, what is it we do and we don't know about seed oils? Again, because there's so much all over the internet now about seed oils, and I feel like it's just important to kind of clear the decks about where the science stands. I think on cancer, we have evidence from multiple randomized controlled clinical trials that is supported by mechanistic evidence. And so I would say that's decent evidence to show that these oils are light, I don't know what words to use, are likely cause of cancer. Heart disease, there's some evidence to support it from randomized controlled clinical trials, such as the Minnesota Coronary Survey. It is a consistent finding that strokes are lower in people who consume more saturated fat and less unsaturated fat. That's a consistent finding, including in the PURE study, which is the largest observational study in the world. And it's very clear that seed oils cause inflammation through their oxidation. That slide wasn't even on the screen. Sorry. There it is. Other health effects, gallstones, could be the vegetable oils, could be the lower cholesterol. Obesity, there is some evidence. There's evidence from 3 clinical trials that seed oils cause obesity, but those have never been systematically reviewed. There's at least one mechanistic hypothesis that's been proposed by Michael Eads in his Breckenridge talk. Diabetes, I don't see any evidence, at least that I have found, that seed oils cause diabetes. So takeaway lessons for yourself, for all of us. Avoid these oils if you can. For salad dressings, use olive oil or avocado oil, which are low in the particular type of fatty acids, linoleic or linolenic, that are more prone to oxidation. For cooking, use a stable fat, any of the ones listed there, and avoid fried food in restaurants, sad to say. Or say, I'm allergic to oils, please use butter. Sometimes that works. All right. Thank you very much. And again,
I'll go over. Thank you, Nina. The one thing that I kind of took away from that, because I knew this stuff, was that you should follow the money, right? If you look at the history of the dietary guidelines and of oils and of the American Heart Association, unfortunately, I guess it's like that today in the world. The other good thing is that in preparation for these days, I made contact with the gastronomy department here at the center, and I was a little bit fussy, and I mentioned seed oils, and they came back and said, we don't use seed oils here.
Oh.
So,
bravo.
Pretty good, yeah. Any questions from the audience? Thank you. Please introduce yourself. Thank you very much.
Hi, Nina. Thanks for a great talk. I'm Beth Zupakania, registered dietitian nutritionist from the U.S. Can you comment on algae oil, which is a new oil on the horizon? It's actually from cultured vegetables. There's not a lot of information on it, but it's higher in monounsaturated fat than olive and avocado oil.
So I don't know anything about it, but I would say the general principle of choosing oils that are higher in monounsaturated fat, so that would be oleic, that is, those fats will be more stable because monounsaturated, mono means only one double bond, only one opportunity to open up and oxidize, versus linoleic, linolenic, which are the omega-6s with multiple double bonds, polyunsaturated fats, which have multiple opportunities to oxidize. So anything that's high in monounsaturated fats is good for you. Why olive oil, avocado oil, and maybe algae oil is better for you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from the audience? Maybe all sitting in shock.
They're just
Nina,
hungry.
Thank you very much.